Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 3, Episode 20. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. I'm David Todd of ESPN in Pittsburgh. Dave, Steeler Nation is groaning. A 1-2 start coming off a 34-31 loss yesterday in a game I think it's fair to say that they clearly had every opportunity to win.
Yeah, you know, I said I thought this game was going to be closer than many thought it would be, and I still thought the Steelers were going to win this game. I was even confident the Steelers were going to win this game when they had that ball the final time, too. I thought, okay, well, this is just going to go just as script here. Roethlisberger's going to drive this thing down. They're going to kick the field goal, game, set, match. You know, the way they had moved the ball, I thought for sure that was going to happen. That, of course, did not happen. It's a game they should have won. If we played this game on paper 100 times, probably the Steelers win 90 of them, probably. But you know, you got to get off the field. I think you got to get off field on third downs, and this is two road games in a row now on the road in the second half when the Steelers defense could not get off the field, and when you throw in the special teams gaffes in there and the penalties, you were just asking for what took place in that game Sunday.
Yeah, Dave, I think it's a tough one to swallow because much like the game in 2006 where the Steelers even dominated to a much greater extent but never were behind, but we're always behind because of the interceptions for touchdowns, you just felt like the Steelers dominated this game. But as you pointed out, the defense, after stopping the Raiders on all four third downs, the first four third downs they had, couldn't get them stopped on seven of the last eight. And the Raiders, scored, feels like at will. They had five drives in the second half. The first three resulted in touchdowns. The last two in a field goal that tied the game. And, of course, the game-winning drive. And, you know, no guarantees that if they had more time, they wouldn't have scored a touchdown on that drive. So it's disappointing. There's so much to go through because so much happened in this game. Why don't we start by going through it half by half, and we'll comment as we go, and we'll assess things. First, though, let's just touch on Mike Tomlin's post-game press conference. He really didn't say a lot, as expected, but he's also kind of he stopped giving updates on injuries. And we saw two things happen in the game. One, Ziggy Hood, while engaged, gets cut. I mistakenly on Twitter thought that that was illegal, but if the guy's next to you, you're allowed to do it. You talked all week about the Raiders' zone blocking scheme. So he got cut there, and it looked bad. I mean, the replay, it looks really bad, but he was able to walk off. And then Marcus Gilbert was in and out during the second half with that right groin strain that he had coming into the game.
And those are the only two injuries. You know, I've got a pretty good eye of picking things out during in-game of when guys get dinged or whatnot, and I really didn't see anything outside of those two. Now, of course, Mike Adams did not dress because of that back, and I was interested to see how old Mike Tomlin was going to handle that because, you know, if these rookies, if they don't work on Thursday and Friday, they don't dress, and, you know, you were kind of worried, well, you know, being that Beecham was going to be the guy that would dress instead of him, was Tomlin going to stick to his guns? Now, we don't know the severity of Mike Adams, but it was good enough for him to sit out Thursday and Friday. So those three guys there, the sad thing about it now is we're probably going to have to wait over a week because no Mike Tomlin presser on Tuesday with the bye week here. The other guys, of course, too, you know, big question marks. You know, people ask me, when's Harrison coming back? I wish I could answer that. You know, if he does not hit the field when they return from the bye week for practice on that first Monday or Wednesday, whenever they get back to work, you're going to have to start being concerned there. Troy, my best guess is that Troy returns after the bye, but once again, that's speculation, not going in on anything concrete on that. Rashard Mendenhall, you know, who knows what's going to happen there? He's been practicing fully these last few weeks, and it's just a guess, and it sure would be nice to get healthy against the Eagles and have all those guys come back and be healthy after this bye week.
Yeah, I think you said it, hit it right on the point. And I just want to point out one thing, because we all talk about injuries and we have limited knowledge on injuries. So when Dave and I are doing this, we're using the information the team provides, our history of following the game. But, of course, this is imperfect in that analysis as it comes. And I'll just come back to the statement when people say, you know, why not rest the guy for another week? Why not rest the guy for another week? You've got to buy. This is the reason you don't rest guys. There are not enough games. That doesn't mean you put a guy who's not healthy out on the field, or a guy who might be in jeopardy of further injuring himself out on the field. But the idea that why not give him another week? Well, the answer is, if that could be the difference between winning the game and losing the game. And Mike Tomlin said it on Tuesday. We don't know if it was just lip service to that idea or not, because none of those guys played. And you'd rather have Troy for the next 11 than just this one. But the thing is, if a guy is healthy and he's cleared by the doctors, then you play him, because every game matters in the NFL.
And, you know, funny you should say that, because they had an interview with Isaac Redman, this past week, and he was talking. They asked him how close he is to being back to 100% after his ankle and his hip problem, and he said that he's only about 80% right now, and this was just earlier this week. So, you know, not everybody out there is 100% playing 100%. So I just don't think Troy and James Harrison are close. I mean, let's face it, Harrison has not worked at all since OTAs, and Troy, they might be a little bit more cautious with him based on his injury and with that calf and all. So, and Mendenhall, we just don't know how close he really is. Coming back from that ACL.
Yeah, I got to think Mendenhall is going to get a full go coming into the Eagle Week and get time. And I'm with you, Troy. I'm with you. None of those guys were able to go, and I think my guess is all of them will unquestionably able. All those guys will unquestionably be able to go for this coming week of practice, except for Harrison. I have no idea. And again, we've been guessing on Harrison all year long. We don't have a lot of info. We had the fact that he practiced two times, so we'll wait and see. So, Dave, let's get into the game. The Steelers win the toss. They elect to defer. No problem with that. We're all kind of on the same page. And the Raiders take the ball, and I think Sushi, he had a good game. He's had a good season, but wasn't his prettiest moment on the opening kickoff when he kind of duck hooked it down to the left, and the Raiders took it out for a pretty good game.
Now, the thing about it, though, too, is that got off the game, so you're kind of wondering about special teams right off the start, because they get a good return out of that, and your kicker's forced to make a tackle on a kickoff. It wasn't pretty. At least he was there. Sometimes just being in the way helps, and that's what happened there. But special teams, and as we get further into this today, we're going to see that special teams played a big role in this loss as well too. But the first play from scrimmage, Carson Palmer tries to hit Denarius Moore down the seam, and Moore slips on that on that infield or whatnot, and basically Palmer overthrows him, and you've got Ryan Clark playing center field there for the easy pick. At that point, right off the bat, you're thinking, oh, thank God, there's a turnover on the first offensive play of the game. When's the last time that we've seen that happen? And you're feeling pretty good, at that point. And then, of course, the offense comes out. Ben, in my opinion, wasn't incredibly accurate on a few of his
He was not sharp early, let's just say it. Some of these passes got completed, but he was not sharp early.
Right, and, you had the Heath Miller catch that was overturned there. You had a quick – I like the quick slant call to Mike Wallace on that nice rub by Emmanuel Sanders that caused both the Raiders defenders to crash into each other. I think Michael Huff was one of them. And right then you're thinking, wow, man, this game really is going in our direction, because here's a Raiders secondary that's already down. They're two starting corners, and now you have a guy that's their free safety that's playing some corner, gets banged up there, and you're thinking, okay, well, things are – maybe the luck is kind of turning in our direction here. The end around to Wallace that followed there.
I want to jump in on that. So the Steelers went for it on fourth and one here in this drive, and I think it was an interesting play call. You didn't know if they were going to wait and take the timeout. I give the offensive lineman a lot of credit for sitting in their stance for a long time, for Ben checking the play, getting the call right, and what I think he did really right. I don't think he didn't make a good throw, but he did a great job, because whoever came off the left side for the Raiders got up on Gilbert and jumped when Ben wanted to throw it immediately. And Ben pulled it down, read that, and waited to throw into the second window for Wallace. And Wallace made a really good catch. That ball was way behind him, and he made a good catch and run on that.
And that's a gutsy play call on fourth and one, too.
And I liked it. I liked it. And Dave, I spent a lot of time on my show today talking about this, and we'll talk about it more with the second, fourth, and one they went on. That got the Steelers 3 points. It might have gotten them 4 points. It might have gotten them 7 points overall. I mean, you assume they're going to make that field goal, but it's still a whatever it is, 43-yarder or something. But it was a good play call. I like it. And later in the season, when we see the Steelers do things on fourth down, and if they don't convert, let's remember the two fourth downs they did convert in this game. They were important.
Absolutely, and I'm with you. I thought it was a gutsy play call. I think Wallace did make a great catch. I think the rub off that Wallace got, like I said, by Sanders on that play was great as well too. Now, two plays later, though, they start trying to run east and west again with Mike Wallace on the end around on the second and five call there. I did not like that. This offensive line, and I said this before this game as well too, this offensive line is not athletic enough to be doing that type of stuff if you're going to expect them to get out in front. You know, of a wide receiver or something like that. So, you know, I did not like that. But on the very next play, you had the Heath Miller Roethlisberger to Heath Miller touchdown pass there. What can you say about Heath Miller, David, that we haven't already said? I wrote about him before the first game of the season too, saying, hey, look at these, you know, look at the over-under on Heath Miller here, you know, and what that is and how I'm taking the over this year. This guy and Todd Haley hit on Heath Miller right at his opening press conference. This is a guy that he wants involved in this offense, and he's getting involved in this offense. And rib cartilage injury aside, you wouldn't know it in this game. And, you know, and that was a great catch by Heath Miller. I believe this was the one where it was kind of the fade out to the corner of the end zone there, and really the linebacker had no chance because Antonio Brown ran the slant kind of the up and in from the outside there, took everybody with him, and I don't know what Wheeler, I think it was Wheeler, the middle linebacker there, just really got a late break on Heath Miller, and that was an easy pitch and catch for Steelers take a 7-0 lead there.
Dave, then we have the touchdown run, and you've compiled these talk stats, these explosive plays, and we saw Demaryius Thomas for the Denver go 71 yards on touch that makes it was a 2-play drive. This is a 3-play drive here. Palmer throws incomplete, so they come out and throw the first 3 times. They gain 16 yards to Myers, which sets up McFadden on 1st and 10. And you've talked to some people about this. You've looked at the play a couple times, but basically McFadden untouched through a big hole.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the other things I talked about for this game, how that zone blocking scheme scared the hell out of me because of the way the Steelers had played against it last year, specifically against the Texans and the Ravens in week 1 and week 4 of the season. You know, when you go back and you look at this play, and I have an animated GIF up on SteelersDepot.com. It's easy to find that post. You know, it looks like Timmons is coming on a run blitz on the outside there. Just watch his steps. He's cheating it the whole way, which lets me know that was his assignment on this play. People want to say, well, this runs on Timmons. I don't think so. I think Timmons is assignment sound on this. The Steelers' left side of their defensive line, I thought, played it well, too, starting outside with Lamar Woodley, who closes off the tackle on the end, and then you have Larry Foote coming up to fill one of the holes there. You have, of course, Ziggy Hood next. You have Casey Hampton, who I thought stayed square on the play and right on top of the center. But then you have the gap there, the A gap, and Brett Kiesel. And according to Chris, and this is what Chris Hoke told me now. Chris Hoke said that it's a tough play for Kiesel have to make, but he's got to get on top of that guard. Probably not necessarily in the A gap, because if you look how far it is that he has to go there, it's quite a distance for him to have to cover. But he's got to prevent that guard from turning him out and stopping the Congo line, so to speak, because as soon as that happens, it's like the Three Stooges episode there where Timmons is crashing into the back of him, and then, you know, the whole thing that just splits open like a ripe watermelon. Then you have, you know, once McFadden, let's face it, McFadden is a dangerous back in the open field. Ryan Mundy doesn't stand a chance. I mean, he's coming up trying to make a tackle and just gets juked out on that play. And then it's off to the races. Now people say, oh, well, Ike Taylor.
Well, let's talk about Mundy there, Dave. I mean, You have an all-pro back at full speed. Mundy's taking a step forward. If he doesn't hit him, there's no chance. I mean, you can put a lot of people in the world against somebody, and if you get to run at them full speed and they're flat-footed and take a step forward at them, they're going to run by him just because they're going to at least juke him to the point where it's a tough play to make, and we're talking about one of the best backs in the game.
I think Troy makes that tackle, though, huh?
That's a good question. I thought Mundy's mistake was taking the step forward. I thought he should have been. Flat and ready to go. And the last time I looked at it, it looked to me like he was moving forward, which I think makes you much more vulnerable to the fake.
Well, it's hard to tell from the behind the play angle there. You know, maybe I'll look at this again when the all 22 comes out. Get a better look at it from the over top view. As far as that goes, so it's kind of hard to say, but it doesn't matter. It was an explosive play, and the Steelers only gave up one explosive play in the game, and go figure, it's that run, and right there, the Raiders are right back in this ball game.
Yeah, Dave, so it's 7-7. The Steelers get the ball back, and, you know, we start to see Ben settle in and really do his thing. This is the only time we saw him run during the game. He had one carry for 8 yards. We saw Beecham in. Beecham reported eligible, according to the – I didn't see it at the time, but according to the play report, Ben still a little bit of trouble early, but then started hitting after the scramble, and he hit Sanders and Redmond and Brown, and basically the Steelers moved the ball right down the field. And then he got Heath again, and they talked about wanting to get Heath to the Pro Bowl. Well, you get him about 20 touchdowns, and he's going to have a good shot of making a Pro Bowl.
And on that drive, you know, you had the Oakland corners playing off, and Ben saw that. You had those quick screens to the outside, the Sanders and the Brown, that both went for good gains there. Yeah, I think, as you noted, the Redmond play there. The touchdown pass to Miller, his second one of the game there, great play-action fake by Ben. He shows everybody in the stadium the ball. On that, Heath Miller comes off the line of scrimmage, latches on to the safety like he's going to block him, releases, and is wide open. I mean, that play was so well designed and so well executed there. Very, very, very hard to stop, and Ben put it right there. But I think stats.com keeps some stats on play actions. Stats and all, and I remember last year at one time them posting something to the fact how deadly Roethlisberger is off of play action, and I think it's something that he hasn't done enough of in recent years, and maybe that's one more focus this year in a Todd Haley offense. But boy, he shows everybody that football out there, and you know that helps sell the play along with Heath Miller latching onto his block and then releasing for the touchdown.
David, it's the next 10 minutes that starts to make you feel comfortable that the Steelers are going to put this game away, because the Steelers, they get a 3-and-out from the Raiders. They get a sack of Carson Palmer by Lamar Woodley. So here we are in the first quarter. We've already gotten a turnover, and we've gotten a sack. And you feel great about things. The Steelers get the ball. They get the false start penalty by Willie. They get the offensive holding. So all of a sudden, as you said, it's second and Mars on Twitter. And then, Ben takes a shot deep, doesn't get it, and he gets the ball to Rainey, and they get 14 yards. That's nice, and they're punting, and we get not a great punt by Butler. Again, not doing a great job on special teams. He had his worst day as a Steeler so far.
On that drive that you mentioned, Ramon, it didn't get off to a great start, and this is when the penalties start coming that really affect the offense here. False start by Ramon Foster to start the drive, that followed up by the Willie Colon hold, and the drive falls apart that quick. And at least the good thing is, and this is all after Antonio Brown has a nice return that flips the field there. You're thinking, as you said, boy, what a great start here. We flipped the field on him. We got another 3-and-out there, good to go. The good thing is the defense came back out. I thought Ziggy Hood had a nice stop on that defensive series. Ike Taylor also, I noted, is making a nice play on that drive. They get them to go 3-and-out out there, and Brown returns the punt for a touchdown. But then our special teams decides to have their two flags on that play, which negate it. So you have to. you have to watch those penalties on you know, killing you there. And right there in that instance there, probably, what, a matter of 5 minutes, you had four flags, I think. But regardless, now you have Baron Batch in the game on this drive. You get a delay of game on third down, which was really inexcusable in my opinion. And then Heath Miller can't hold on to the third down pass that followed across the middle there. And then Drew Butler decides to pull out the dreaded shankopotamus. And at that point, you're thinking, oh, man, you know, some of these penalties catching up with the special teams is starting to kill us here. And of course, they had to punt.
Yeah, and let me ask you about Baron Batch here. It looked like he was running hard. It's the second quarter. Do you think this was pregame design, or do you think this was the coaching staff throwing up their arms a little bit and saying, nobody can move the ball on offense, let's give this kid a try?
I think Ben wanted that in there, and Ben got what he wanted, I think. You know, I think at that point they're thinking, okay, let's put this 11 personnel grouping in more, and let's start going with it here. That's my opinion. We might not you know, ever know the true answer to that. But, you know, and then the Raiders get the ball back there, and on second down, Jason Worlds, he's out there.
Do we agree the overturning of the call was the right call?
On Heath Miller?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they got that right.
Yeah.
On second down, when the Raiders get the ball back there, Jason Worlds is in no man's land as McFadden catches an easy one out of the backfield. Worlds does make up for it on the next play because he forces McFadden outside wide, and Ike Taylor gets a stop there. So at least the defense is getting some stops here, even though the offense is the one, and the special teams have been kind of shooting themselves in the foot here early on in this game. When the Raiders punted there, I notated, why in the heck was Antonio Brown calling for a fair catch there? Yet another special teams gap there. I don't think the closest man was 15 yards from him when he makes that fair catch there. And I noted that as yet another special teams gap. And then you add a face mask onto that on that punt. And then the Steelers are really, really backed up there pretty good. You get a few nice runs, I thought, by Isaac Redman on the drive early on. And then Jonathan Dwyer comes into the game and decides to put the ball. I think Ramon Foster is no help on that play. But, you know, Jonathan Dwyer's got to hold on to that football. And you're really starting to scratch your head right now at this point, thinking, man, the defense has actually been playing good. But yet, you know, here we are with the turnover, some special teams gaffes, and some penalties here. And now the Raiders have the football and are in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's three straight three and outs right there. From the one that happened with at the end of the with 3 minutes, 49 seconds left in the first quarter, they get them out. The Raiders have the ball that turns over the second quarter. They get them out, and then they get them out the next possession in the second quarter. And as you said, Dwyer, the Steelers have to start deep in their own end, and you know, just it doesn't work.
No, and then anytime you turn the ball over, you know, we keep this talk stats and all like that, that's relying on explosive plays and turnovers, and you can't turn the ball over like that. Now when they get the ball back here, I thought Cortez Allen, you know, they drove down deep. I thought Cortez Allen made a nice tackle on the third down play, sets up that fourth down play there. The Raiders definitely had two men in motion, maybe three men in motion on that fourth down play there. But Brett Kiesel is not the referee. And he
exactly.
You know, and he steps across the line there, and he's the one that gets flagged. So
let's talk about that, because he wasn't drawn across, I don't think. Now, maybe he had a little bit of momentum and stood up, and it just looked like he was standing up. But it looked to me that he could have stopped himself or gone back more quickly.
He just walks across the line of scrimmage pointing.
Exactly.
And that's inexcusable. I mean, yes, the refs missed the call there, but you're not the referee, you know. Now, Kiesel didn't. I just posted this a little while ago up on the site. It's the latest post. How Kiesel was a man after the game, and heck, how could you not be? Because you know, those are two big plays there, talking about the McFadden run and then this encroachment call that he got flagged for, basically resulted in 14 points there, when instead maybe you're talking about 3 or 6 points there. So Brett Kiesel, yes, he was a huge goat in the first half, in my opinion there. And, you know, when they did score there, when the Raiders did score, it was Ryan Mundy getting rubbed off of his coverage on Darius Hayward Bay there. It was a great play call by the Raiders, and it was a great execution by everyone involved out there. It's kind of tough, I mean, for a safety, for a strong safety of all people to try to have to fight through something like that in with limited area to work in there. And Mundy got beat for the touchdown. So now, after all that good feeling that we kind of had early in this game, here we are 14-14.
Yeah, and I want to just reiterate, that was a really good throw by Carson Palmer as well. Mundy's coverage wasn't perfect, but it wasn't terrible. He just, you know, he got rubbed off.
Yeah, he was trailing. I mean, there's no you can't go through two. You can't walk through two people.
Yeah, and so they tie the game up, and as you say, here we go, basically at the two-minute warning, and the Steelers are getting the ball back 14-14. And the saving grace here is the bad thing is the Steelers are getting the ball here with no timeouts. And I can't remember exactly how we used the sequence of timeouts, but they have no timeouts in this situation. Makes a huge difference. Ben's really good at managing the two-minute drill. I think he did a good job here, but not having the timeouts was probably cost them points. And the second point on that is, you know, you're going to get the ball to start the second half. So any points you get here are gravy, and you can add to that to start the second half. And Ben takes them through this two-minute drill, and they did a nice job, except not having any timeouts, they chose to use the middle of the field. And if you use the middle of the field, it's going to take up a lot more time.
Yeah, Baron Batch had a couple of nice catches. One of those, he did good to continue on with his route and get outside and open.
That was a really nifty move.
It really, really was. And I, you know, Baron Batch is a heady kid. And, you know, we talked about his blocking last week in the game against the Jets. He's starting to do more and more things, and he's right now, in my opinion, he's the better third down back to have in there than Chris Rainey. Chris Rainey really tips, kind of, in my opinion, what you're going to do with him anyway in there. I think Baron Batch gives you the ability to pick up the blitz, you know, some extra protection in there. You can use him in between the tackles, and you can use him out of the backfield as a pass catcher there. But two nice catches by him on that drive. Then you had the explosive play to Emmanuel Sanders, which Matt Giordano on that hit, that looked kind of helmet-to-helmet to me there, too. There was no flag on that. I was worried about Manny after that because he had taken a hit. What was it? Was it the week one or week two game? I can't remember which game.
Yeah, week one game against Denver.
Yeah, and I kind of worried, but he popped right up from that. But anyway, you know, the drive stall, it was a great drive, though. I thought Roethlisberger did a great job on the drive, as you said, not having any timeouts in his pocket there. And as you also said, is they get the ball in the second half. So any points that you get going into the half here is gravy on top of that, because you're going to get the ball in the second half. And so the Steelers walk into halftime 17-14, and the takeaway, I think, from the first half, special teams played absolutely lousy in the first half. And here's some of my other notes here. Roethlisberger was not very accurate to start the game, but it didn't kill him. He got better very, very quick. Heath Miller continues his hot start of the season. The explosive touchdown by Darren McFadden was a killer. When you combine that with the special team errors, when you combine that with the fumble by Jonathan Dwyer, and then the encroachment penalty on Brett Kiesel, that's why this game is as close as it is. You can just boil this thing down to basically three plays and a couple special teams plays, and that's why it's 17-14 at the half.
Yeah, and Dave, the only other note that I'll throw in that I had was it was a nice athletic catch by Will Johnson on the one time they used him. A nice play. Look, they've got a lot of weapons offensively. There's no urgency to get Will Johnson more involved in the offense, but the few times he's been asked to do things, he's done them well.
Yeah, I agree. And this is a guy I'd like to see more of that Will route used on. This kid has great hands. He's getting a little bit better as a blocker, so inconsistent at times. But, yeah, I thought the offense moved the ball well, and the defense was able to get off on third downs. And you're thinking, okay, 17-14, as long as we're able to move the ball in the second half like that, you know, we're going to be able to get out of here and get back on the plane with a W.
And, Dave, just to dot the I's and cross the T's, the timeouts in the first half, they used the first one really early in the game when Mike Tomlin challenged the Heath Miller pass incomplete down the right side. The Steelers lost that one. So that was one where they used it. The second one, and I had to go through the game log to look at this. Ben threw an incomplete pass on 2nd and 25 to Antonio Brown. So they got a second, they got a 3rd and 25 from their 37. And this is before the play they threw to Rainey. And they used a timeout there. And you just wonder, in hindsight, are you better off taking a delay a game when it's 3rd and 25 as opposed to using a timeout? So they're down to one timeout. And the last timeout, they burned it with they had a 3rd and 1 from their own 17. And, okay, I don't have necessarily a problem. I don't remember the play. But Redmond had just run for 4, and they used a timeout. And out of the timeout, Ben hit Redmond to get a first down. So maybe it seems like that might have been an issue of design. So it just goes to show that, these timeouts are they're not nothing. They're not nothing. And I really feel comfortable saying that if Ben had 2 more timeouts, the Steelers probably have 30 more seconds to use that drive in the first half. And as you know, they finished that drive on the 16-yard line. 30 more seconds and another first down is plenty of time to, take 3 shots in the end zone or get another first down from there.
Yeah, and people have asked me via email, David, and via Twitter, why don't you and David crack on Mike Tomlin more? Outside of that, I guess the time management, which you've always really had a kind of an issue with Mike Tomlin and his clock management, and not so much his timeouts, I don't think, at times, but more of his clock management issues. I would say but sometimes on these challenges, though, those were close on the ones on Heath Miller,
I think you said it just right. So I think you paraphrased it, paraphrased it the way I would say we look at it. It's one of the things is we can grade play. It's harder for us to make personnel judgments. We don't see practices. We don't see a lot of other stuff. What we do see is guys in there, and it's why we may have an opinion about Dwyer versus Redmond, now Batch versus either of them. We don't see them in practice. You go see what they do, and you say, do they deserve another opportunity? But there's so much we don't know that, we're also cognizant of that and try to do all our analysis and all our commentary being aware of that fact.
Exactly, and I think outside of maybe those challenges, I really can't find a way to crack Tomlin in the first half, and we'll get on into this second half now. Hey, trust me, listeners, we are not afraid to take someone to task when they need it. We don't always paint the rosiest of pictures. We try to look at these things objectively, more so than anybody else that you'll read out there, because let's face it, the media is agenda driven. We see this time and time again. I love some of these guys in the media, but it's just the way it is with these guys. Now, in the second half here, the Steelers get the ball. Poor Kelvin Beachum comes in, first play of the second half. And he
I thought it was the first play of his career, but I guess looking at the play log, he did check in eligible once. But yeah.
We'll see. Allen's or Nick is charting the offense for me, so I missed that myself if he did check in as a eligible there. But, first play of the second half, and he can't hold his water. And so there you are, already in the hole on your first snap. Now, Ben Roethlisberger he tried to drop that ball into Mike Wallace there, and I thought Ben should have had that throw on the outside on that deep ball to Mike Wallace. I think there was enough room for him to drop that in there, but, of course, he didn't. On third down, Roethlisberger misses Antonio Brown on the right sideline.
And that, I'll even go as far as to say I thought that one was way worse. You have to – it was a great pump by Ben. You have to hit him there. That's a touchdown.
No, that would have moved the chains to Brown.
What's that?
That play that you're talking about to Mike Wallace down the side, I don't think that would have been a touchdown.
No, I'm talking about let me just make sure I'm on the right page here. The false start. No, I'm talking about the one to Antonio Brown. Okay, maybe not a touchdown. I'm exaggerating. But is that the one where he pumped Brown on the right sideline?
No, this was an out pattern, out towards the first down.
I got my plays confused. You know that one where he missed Antonio Brown? That might have been early in the game when he had him on a pump fake and then had him overthrew him down the right sideline.
I'm going to have to go back over that.
Yeah, all
right. I'm not pulling that one out of my head right now. But the one to Antonio Brown, he should have made anyway, because that would have moved the chains there.
That's the one he threw way in front of him. Okay.
Yeah.
The other one was in the first half when he pumped him. But, yeah, so he throws again, comes out just like at the start of the game. His accuracy not very good. And, in fact, Dan Fouts commented on the TV side of things there. He said, look, those are two bad throws to start the half.
Absolutely. But he makes up for it with a clutch throw on third down. You know, my new nickname for Ben is Third Down Ben Does It Again, because this guy is just deadly on third down. A great clutch throw to Wallace on third down to move the chains. Then just two strikes to Antonio Brown. And the offense, you're starting to feel that rhythm of the offense at that point. The pass protection up to this point in the whole ball game, in my opinion, has been good throughout this thing. And they're moving the ball again. The touchdown pass to Wallace was just Ben escaping the pressure, keeping the play alive. Enough for Mike Wallace to clear out in the back of that end zone there, and Roethlisberger puts it right on the money there. And I notated at the end of this drive was all Roethlisberger, and it, both good and bad. But that's what it was. And the Steelers are back up, and you're starting to feel real, real good at this point. The defense has not even hit the field yet for the second half.
Yep, couldn't agree more. You see Ben do that, and the touchdown play, look, Ben did a really good job of keeping it alive. They're in the no huddle. I think I asked you this on Twitter, but I didn't see, they obviously didn't have to go no huddle when they started. They went incomplete, and passed complete to Ben. So they really did crank it up, and they really went that way the whole second half, right?
For the most part, we'll see what the charting says on that. I haven't charted the no huddle.
I think Oakland went largely no huddle in the second half as well.
Now they did, and they did, and Carson Palmer did a great job in that as well too. It helps when you're not under pressure too. More on that in a little bit here, but you know, the Steelers kick off here once again. The special teams unit really, really hurts him here, because Mike Goodson returns that kick up to midfield there. Real quick after that, Darren McFadden gets to the second level on a nicely run draw play. Both Lawrence Timmons and Ryan Clark missed tackles. How it's starting to become a habit with Lawrence Timmons flying past some plays, isn't it?
Well, it's a habit for us talking about it, so it clearly is a habit, because it happened in the first two games, and we've talked about the angles he takes. And it happened again here. I mean, we saw it a couple different times in this game.
He's got to start making some plays in there. And, you know, instead of maybe trying to go so quick for the thrown for the loss, man, just read the play out and stop it for 1 or 2 yards instead of going flying past it. I think Mike Tomlin talked in the preseason about Sylvester and Stevenson Sylvester and maybe Timmons too at one point, saying that these guys got to do a better job of keeping themselves under control. And he's just coming through there like a bull in a china cabinet, just not in control, and he's missing. He's flying right past tackles on this. The play against Denver when the running back, when Chris Carter, I think, gets caught inside on the run by Noshon Marino, that's Lawrence Timmons. Although Timmons' whole gap is kind of cut off there, he misses that tackle as well, too. It's starting to become a weekly occurrence with this thing. A lot of people are hollering about it on Twitter. And message boards, you know, this is a guy we gave, what, $60 million?
$50 million for 6 years.
Yeah, $50 million 6 years to that. This guy's got to start making some plays here. Ryan Clark, really his miss. Some guy, he's coming up flying out like a bullet out of a gun here. I thought overall Ryan Clark had a good game overall in this game. Ike Taylor had good position on Darius Heyward Bey on the deep play down the right side to prevent a long touchdown, even though Darius Heyward Bey probably could have adjusted on that ball.
He did adjust, and I got worried because it almost looked like that play last week where all of a sudden Heyward Bey cuts in front of Ike, and he's got a chance to make the catch in front of him.
Exactly. So Ike, even though he did a good job at first getting position on him, you got to see that thing all the way through and make sure you cut him off. But luckily that didn't kill him right there. Carson Palmer then hits Denarius Moore with a nice pass right between Larry Foote and Cortez Allen. And then all of a sudden you turn around because of the kickoff return and all. The Raiders offense is right in the red zone. And now Palmer just turns into sort of a Drew Brees-like in the way that, you know, he's utilizing himself out of the pocket. He's taking everything up underneath the zone. I mean, he's just very, very calm and just taking, you know, he's not forcing any balls, and it's there for him underneath, and there's no real pressure on the quarterback at this time. Foot misses a tackle on McFadden on one of those runs. It's the one, I believe, that McFadden reached out for the goal line that initially was ruled a touchdown, but his elbow was down. Three people missed on that play. You had Larry Foote, you had Ryan Mundy and Cortez Allen, I believe, that all had shots on McFadden on that play, and he almost scored. And there he is down at the one-foot line or whatnot. And then Palmer just hits. It looked like busted coverage or something in there, but Carson Palmer hits the wide-open tight end for the touchdown with Ryan Mundy. You know, if you're going
to – He's 4 yards deep, and he's got a guy in front of him, a guy behind him. He has nowhere to go.
And he's chasing the wrong way, too. He's over there trying to step in front of a receiver that's 6 yards – that has two other guys trailing after him there at that point there. So that was an easy pitch and catch by Palmer, a great drive by the Raiders, a great execution, poor tackling by the Steelers on that drive. And Raiders are right back in this, and then surprise, surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Chris Rainey gets involved in the no huddle, and you know we had heard.
I was talking about the onside kick that followed.
Where yeah, of course I shouldn't forget that. Yep, go ahead. They two surprises here.
They caught us with our pants around our ankles there, and boy, that could have been disastrous there. Thank God that ball went out of bounds there, and I'll let you pick it up there.
I mean, perfectly executed. They did exactly what you wanted to do. Sebo had it right. He got it. You know, he had the ball bounce right. Whoever blocked down on was it Brandon Jacobs? I can't. It wasn't Brandon Johnson. I can't remember. Maybe it was Worlds. I'm trying to remember who was on that left edge or the right edge. I'll have to watch it again. Whoever it is gets completely cleaned out in the play. And they have a guy coming on the outside to recover it. And the Raiders were unlucky, no doubt about it, because if this guy is able to smother it, if it bounces into him, if it does basically anything but bounce out of bounds, the Raiders are probably getting the ball. The Steelers got a huge break. It did bounce out of bounds. I give Dennis Allen good credit on that. Again, we talk about coaches making decisions. They won this game. They made a gutsy call there. Good for him. It didn't work out. Lucky for the Steelers. And then they come out no huddle. And we've not seen Chris Rainey in this situation. After week one, Todd Haley said he's not part of the no-huddle package. But, again, the Steelers are clearly looking for a guy to do something. And they gave the ball to Chris Rainey on the second play after getting 6 yards on first down. And he got a 5-yard gain up the middle to get a first down. So then they move it to Chris, and they run Rainey again down to the 19 on first down. After the pass to Miller, gets 16 yards. They run Rainey again off tackle. So you now see Chris Rainey in there getting his two carries. That was surprising to me. And then the Steelers kind of methodically get the ball down the field. Some good passes, and I really want to highlight this touchdown play because it's second and 11. I think it is actually 11, not second and goal, but whatever it is, the Steelers are set up. And Ben audibles here. And there's no question in my mind that he reads the safety blitz. He sees exactly what's coming, and he audibles the quick out to Antonio Brown, and Brown goes in for the touchdown. But Ben did a great job here. He called exactly the right play, much like Peyton Manning calling the pass to Demaryius Moore in week one against the Steelers. This I really put on Ben, and it was my favorite thing maybe that happened this whole game. And Brown did a good job getting in the end zone. Unfortunately, a half yard out, he fumbles, and there's no way in the world he should have been able to get the ball back. But one of the Steelers dove into the pile and apparently knocked the ball all the way through the pile to Antonio Brown, 1 yard, you know, a yard into the end zone, and he fell on it just as another Raider went after him. And, okay, here we sit again with Steelers with a 10-point lead at 31-21.
I had a fantasy team that could have used two touchdowns from Antonio Brown on that one play there. So, it was a great run after catch by Antonio Brown, and this is what wide receivers are paid to do: run after the catch. Anybody can catch a bubble screen with nobody guarding him, but they're paid to run after the catch there, and that's what he did. Ball security, you just got to do a better job of keeping that thing tucked in there. You know, some defenses paid to knock it out as well, too. But as you said, here we are now. You're back kind of feeling pretty good. The Steelers have a 10-point lead at that point.
And I'll just throw the stat at, because we get into the fourth quarter, into this next possession. And what happens is, well, maybe I'm not getting my stats exactly right. I think we got into the fourth quarter, but now I'm looking at the play chart. Yeah, we did get into the.
Well, Palmer leaves him back down the field, chewing the underneath zone. I don't know. I haven't notated what part of the.
So essentially the Raiders come back. It's the first time in 48 games in the second half, I think, where they've been down 10 points, where they come back to win. We all know how the result ended up. Palmer takes him down the field. It's the Steelers are leading 31-21. They get four plays at the end of that quarter. They're deep in Steeler territory. They get a situation where they go first down, first down, first down, and then they get 6 yards and they get a false start. So it's second and nine, and he throws incomplete. He's got a third and nine, and then they complete another pass, a 17-yarder in front of Cortez Allen to Streeter on the sideline. That's a play where he got dinged up. Eventually they get down there again. And another penalty on them. You look like, you're hoping the Steelers to keep him out of the end zone, but at this point you're just feeling it's almost inevitable. And he throws that, he rolls left and makes a very good throw to Denarius Moore, who dives, lays out, and catches it for a 6-yard touchdown. And here we are again with 12 minutes left in the game at 31-28.
And on that third and nine that you led up to, I wrote that up as being a crucial third and nine, and he made a great throw to Rod Streeter there. I believe he dumped that in between Cortez and Keenan Lewis there on that sideline over there. There was a great throw by Palmer, a great catch. That was such a backbreaker when you have a guy third and nine and you don't stop him there. And, of course, on the next play, I think Mundy breaks up. Hey, that was going to be a touchdown to Hayward Bay if Mundy doesn't put him to sleep there.
It was. And, look, this is it's a vicious game. The hit on Ed Reed put on Deion Branch later in the evening was much worse than this. This was, this is a lot. I look at it just like the Timmons hit on Sanchez. Probably a play that should have been flagged. He's going to get fined. Was it malicious? No, this is part of the game. He went in and did what he's supposed to do, and he happened to catch him on the jaw. But those things are really close. That guy's head's tilted just a little differently. It was not a helmet-to-helmet shot.
Yeah, and, after that long delay there, I'm thinking, okay, well, man, at least the defense is going to get some rest here during them stretching up Bay to get him off the field. But no such luck there. And I joke about this. Darius Hayward Bay has been released from the hospital, and things are looking up for him. And
he's fine. I mean, he's full recovery. Everything's good. He's home.
Yeah, and Mundy, this was not an egregious shot. It was not with intent to injure. But, as Mike Tomlin's new slogan is, what is it? Use your head, don't hit the head, and always bring a towel or something like that. He's going to get fined. He's going to get the FedEx envelope there. They converted another key third down on that drive, too, after that to Marcel Reese out of the backfield. And Jason Worlds nowhere close in coverage there. I know that is another third down conversion on that drive. Brett Kiesel does get pressure on the touchdown pass, but Palmer escapes it out to his left. He hits Moore in the front corner of that far left corner of the end zone there. And if you go back and watch the play, Ike Taylor had slipped and fell in the end zone. And just did not recover enough, and Palmer put that ball outside where only Moore can catch it there. And then you're thinking to yourself, oh, crap, here we go. And, Steelers take over, and a few plays later, I think that's when the Antonio Brown fumble's coming up.
Yep, start on our own 36 with the second and three after a gain, and Antonio catches a nice pass over the middle, and we all kind of cringe and hold our breath a little bit when wide receivers are fighting in the middle of the field to gain yardage. And I give Giordano credit. This is the guy who was down on the touchdown and left the field. He came back. I think it was – actually, it might have been Lee on this now that I think about it. It was Patrick Lee kind of falling to the ground, wrestling to pull the ball out from Antonio Brown, and it went right into the hands of one Raider, and he flobbed it up in the air. And then all of a sudden you felt like, wow, not only this could – we could actually get the Steelers could get the ball because now a bunch of Steelers have converged on the play, and they were all silver and black when the first guy – when it was in the first guy's arms. But unfortunately, it goes into the second guy's arms, and he juggles it and is able to hold it. And so the Raiders take over, 10:45 left in the game. It's still a 31-28 lead, and this turnover is devastating, but it is on the Steelers' 36-yard line. And like clockwork, the Raiders, you know, they face two third down. They only face one third down, and as they get down there, they get a third and three on the Steeler 24, and they get a four-yard pass to Hagan. They kind of methodically work down the field. One, the big play being a defensive pass interference call on Keenan Lewis, which was the correct call. Never turned his head. Definitely got into the guy on the play. But the Steelers finally got a stop when Palmer threw a pass short left, and Timmons made a tackle. And so they settled for a 32-yard field goal.
One thing I want to highlight on that drive of theirs, too, is that draw play to McFadden. Watch the video on that when McFadden gets the ball from Palmer. Three linebackers are behind the handoff.
Clearly up the field, and that's when you call a draw play. What a great call.
Yeah, I mean, they coming around the end there, and all three of – you only have two guys up front on the line of scrimmage at that time, and McFadden makes a great run, and luckily their drive stalled. As you said, Derek Hagan easily converted another third down on that drive as Ike Taylor was playing way soft on him, gave him too much of a cushion on a short third down play there. But they did stall, and the game's tied at 31. And even after all this to this point, David, the defense has not been able to stop the Raiders at all in the second half, off the scoreboard, I should say, at least. You're still thinking, okay, well, the Steelers are going to get the ball back. Ben's going to drive down, and we're going to get the field goal here. We're going to get on the plane. We're going to get the W.
You know, that is exactly what I'm thinking. And you just think about what's going on when – this is a situation where do you want to go fast? Do you want to go slow? Are you trying to run clock or not run clock? What are you up to? And it's some interesting stuff going on here for the Steelers.
Did you think they messed up? I thought they messed up their tempo there, but I understand that they're trying to run clock out there, and that's why they were running the ball. But
yeah, I think they messed up.
Did you think they messed their tempo?
Of course I do. In fact, I think you go with what you've been going with until you get to midfield, and then you can start thinking about tempo because you're controlling the field position game to a much greater extent. So I would have been fine having them just come out and throw three passes, and if you don't complete them, you're punting the ball away with 5 minutes left as opposed to something different. But the fact of the matter is they did get that first down. And, Dave, I said – clearly, I was all for him going for it there. I actually don't know what your thoughts were on that.
First of all, leading up to it, I guess we should put this in chronological order here.
Willie gets the penalty.
Right. Willie gets the penalty there first. And then Roethlisberger hits Wallace, who fumbles. But luckily he gets on that there. So you're faced at a second and three here. And this is where I think the tempo kind of got messed up here. We're on these next two runs because, you're having all the success in the world at throwing the football. I understand at that time there's, five something left on the clock and you're wanting to chew clock. And you have visions dancing through your head of that long drive last week against the Jets that ate up so much clock. I understand why. I just think it just kind of messed the whole rhythm up there on those next two runs because Redmond only gets two on the first one. He gets no gain on the second one. The Steelers call time out there. And I think Roethlisberger even said, go ahead, that he mentioned something to Tomlin like he should challenge the spot or anything because you're going to use the timeout anyway there. But regardless, I think Tomlin made the right call. I was hollering at the TV for him to go for it on fourth down, and people are automatically saying, well, this shows that Tomlin doesn't have any faith in his defense here. You know what? You're damn right he didn't have any faith.
And you know what's even more interesting is he said it in the post game.
Sure.
He said we hadn't had a stop, and I think when we need a yard, we should get a yard. And it's just flashback to Bill Belichick against Indianapolis a couple years ago where he had a fourth and two, and they ran a play, and Brady actually missed the open receiver. He threw to another guy. They didn't get it done. But it's a play there where, look, this is the big boy league. The defense hadn't got it done. If their feelings are hurt, too bad, play better. This is not about any of the bullshit about confidence in your defense.
And he was in a no-win situation with that call.
Exactly the wrong amount of time left.
He is in the wrong situation. I mean, he's in a no-win situation. If he punts the ball and they come down and score, people are going to say, he should have went for it on fourth and one. If he goes through it for it on fourth and one and something happens somehow that they don't get that, he should have punted the ball away. So props to him for going for it on that. And he gave you the reasoning in the press conference, and I bet he didn't lose one bit of damn sleep last night making that call. And you know what? Isaac Redman got 6 yards on the play anyway. So
were you surprised they ran the ball on both those plays, third and fourth down?
I was surprised
they ran it on third down.
I was too. I was too. But, maybe that's sending a message to his offensive line and says, look, guys, you got to get me this 1 yard here. But I think all those three plays together, all those three runs together messed up the tempo of that drive there. And
there's no question in my mind, if you want to point to a play, you can't point to one play in this game as the biggest play in the game, but, man, the Raiders don't have a sack the whole time. Steelers go no huddle right after the first down, and they get sacked.
Absolutely. First sack.
I mean, that stuff kills you.
Sure does. And we talked last podcast, how many times, as good as Ben Roethlisberger is on third down and long, just the odds are going to catch up with you sooner or later. You're not going to be able to convert one of those. So second down, the pass to Heath Miller. Out to the short left for 6 yards. Okay, good to go. But you still you're third and nine then at that point there. And Roethlisberger said the original play call was they had the hot blitz coming on the third and nine there. Heath Miller was the hot receiver, but that was only going to pick up. They had it covered. Roethlisberger said, and that would have only picked up a few yards anyway. They would have been short. So he stepped up into the pocket there, held on to the ball, and he admits he missed Wallace on that play. So I bet he wishes he had that throw back there on that.
But he was under pressure. He was getting a guy wrapped around his legs at the time, and we know where it went from there. It's worth pointing out that the Raiders, they're incomplete on the first two plays of the drive, so you still really kind of had an opportunity to feel good about it because they had a minute 23 on the clock. They're on their own 25. And even though they got 15 yards there, you still think the Steelers are going to get the stop. Maybe they're going to have to go to overtime now, but they're going to get the stop. And it's just Carson just goes, on the first one he went 15, then he goes 9, 8, and then the 17-yard pass to Hagan over the middle. That sealed the deal. And then it's just lining the ball up for Sebo, who's, pretty automatic.
Yeah, well, I like to call him Seabass. But that guy could kick the ball from the damn, 70 yards out. Sometimes the guy's got a rocket. But, yeah, they didn't do themselves no favors on that final drive. Their defense was gassed. Everything was up underneath there. That third and 10, once they converted that third and 10 from their own 25, I knew it was ball game at that
point. Well, they were certainly playing with house money at that point because they're either getting overtime or they're winning the game.
Absolutely, absolutely. And they just moved it down. And Steelers deserve the loss at that point. You can't – if you don't stop a team in the second half like the Steelers failed to do, you don't deserve to win the game there. And you turn the ball over. You had the special teams gaffes that you had in there. What can you say about this? I mean, it's a loss, and as Tomlin said, they're going to chew on this, and it's not going to taste good for a while. There were some positives to take from the game, the play of Roethlisberger, the play of Heath Miller, the play of Mike Wallace in this game. Not too much to get excited about outside of the defense, but maybe some play in the first half there. Not a lot of pressure. And, David, if you do not – we saw this last year. We're not going to get the turnovers. We're not going to get the sacks if we don't figure out a way to get pressure on the quarterback, plain and simple. I don't care what you have to do. Some of these blitzes I don't think are being timed perfectly here. They're definitely not getting home. We're not seeing – I think we only saw maybe two defensive back blitzes, one safety and one corner, I think, in this game. There may have been a few.
You know, good point, Dave. I brought that up on my show. I want to see it again. I don't think I saw safeties come or corners come hardly at all. So two wouldn't surprise me at all. I couldn't remember any. And so the variation on the blitz, you know, they got to find in big capital letters on my notes today. I have impossible to stop the passing game in the NFL if you don't get pressure. Neither team got pressure.
And we've seen the Steelers play good quarterbacks. And I think Carson Palmer is a good, experienced quarterback that's patient. And if you play in a zone, mostly a zone-type look defense, and if you have a patient quarterback, and if that patient quarterback is not getting pressured, he's going to take what you give him up underneath there. And we've seen this against Breeze. We've seen this against Brady. We've seen this against Aaron Rodgers. The good quarterbacks, Eli Manning, the good quarterbacks are going to get you this way. So LeBeau has got to figure out a way to start getting some pressure on opposing quarterbacks, or the offense is going to have to start scoring 35 points every week.
Yeah, and the good thing is with this loss, Dave, the Steelers have a bye week, and we've got about 30 more minutes of analysis that we're going to do on this game, and we'll save most of it for Wednesday because there are, you know, there's numbers about looking at how the teams that the Steelers played the team the Steelers were going to play the week before, how much they gouged them for, running game, and the Steelers not being able to run, third down conversions, all the different things. And, of course, on Wednesday with the bye week, instead of having a beat writer on, we'll look around the league a little bit and talk about this Patriots-Ravens game. That was an interesting game to watch. Some other things that went on. We'll get into the replacement refs a little more. We've got a ton of stuff to cover. We're already at an hour right now, so we're gonna cut this one off here, Dave. But let me just ask you a simple question: which fan base? I'm gonna give you six choices, and you can't pick the Steelers, okay? Because that's just too easy. Which fan base is most apoplectic today? Patriots, Eagles, Saints, Lions, Broncos, to this point in the season?
Definitely the Saints. It's got to be the Saints.
Got to be the Saints, 0-3, yeah. I agree with you.
Not even sure what apoplectic means.
apoplectic, but yeah, because I didn't even say it right. That's why. But there are, you know, so many unhappy teams. We'll just leave it on a semi-positive note that, look, this is three games into a 16-game season. I think if you looked at the schedule beforehand, you probably had the Steelers going maybe 3-0, worst case scenario 2-1. So they're probably maybe a game down from where most people expected. Two of these games on the West Coast, they've got that out of their schedule now. They don't have to go do that again. So and hopefully they get healthy as they go on here. But I will caution you, the negative side of things is after this bye week, they play an Eagles team that I think is much better than they've shown and is very dangerous. And then they have to go on the Thursday afterward to Tennessee. So it's no piece of cake.
Absolutely. I think we can take this bye team this week. I don't think they've won a game. So
they're not going to hang 30 on us, at least.
No, we're probably not going to score either, but that's good. But try to end this thing on a positive note there. Look, the Steelers were in a position to win this game. All three games now this year, of course, they did win one of them. They were in a position to win the other two. So it's not like we're getting blown out here. The defense needs to get better, and we'll break down more of this going on into this week. As you said, we've got plenty of time. So as always, please follow me on Twitter and my weird personality there at Steelers Depot. You can follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. You should be tuning in to David's show on ESPN 970 as well, too. He's also on game days in the morning as well, too, and I join him on that segment as well, too. And we're running long here at Terrible Podcast. Follow that. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. David, take us into the bye week.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.